want to offer my personal condolences to the nation.
I have expressed to the Prime Minister all our sympathy, our condolences, and our support.
Tonight, we also pray for the speedy recovery of the others injured in these despicable attacks.
As so often in such serious situations,
it was an attack on our most intrinsic and cherished values.
We are here for you, whatever you need, whatever we can do to ease your pain.
You know this drill. An unspeakable tragedy happens somewhere in the world, and politicians everywhere have to say something, have to offer comfort, have to vow to help. Some of them are better at it than others, but they all do it. So, does what they say matter? Why? And to whom? Does when they say it matter? Does it matter, for instance, if they manage a social media post in the immediate aftermath? Or if they wait and compose something and release an official statement later? I think we're all probably aware that there is a bad way to offer thoughts and prayers after a tragedy. But is there a good one? And if there is, good in what sense? Good because it's comforting to the afflicted, even if they're half a world away and will never see it or hear it? Or good because it's helpful to the politician in question? Who really needs to see and hear these statements after a tragedy? And how often do those people actually get what they need from them? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Fatima Syed is an investigative reporter for the National Observer. Fatima, you led us into a discussion of what we actually expect from leaders after a tragedy. And you did it through an exchange with Andrew Scheer. Can you tell me how that came about?
This is me at 10 p.m. or 11 p.m., I think it was, when the news broke of this terrorist attack on two mosques in New Zealand. At first, you know, I'm a member of the Muslim community. I'm processing. My initial tweet was, you know, one of grieving and trying to make sense of it. And then a couple hours later, Andrew Scheer, the leader of the Conservative Party, is the first Canadian leader to tweet about it. And we all know it's coming, right? We're waiting.
Everybody's going to tweet something. Discussing today.
Everyone's going to tweet something, and people will always look for the leaders. And Andrew Scheer comes up first. And this is what he says. Freedom has come under attack in New Zealand as peaceful worshippers are targeted in a despicable act of evil. All people must be able to practice their faith freely and without fear. There are no words strong enough to condemn this kind of vile hatred. I am praying for peace for the families of those lost and recovery for those injured. I read this tweet and I'm shocked. There's nothing in there that says that some 50 members of the Muslim community in New Zealand were killed. There's nothing in there about the shooter and his identity. There's nothing in there about the ideology and the thinking that was already on social media because the shooting was live streamed and the shooter's manifesto was already shared publicly on his Facebook page and in a tweet, I believe.
Right. It was all there by the time the act was committed.
It was all there by the time the act was committed, and it was all there for everyone to read and look at if they wanted to. And this is a leader of a major Canadian political party, and none of that is addressed, even though the forces at play exist in this country, even though the shooter in New Zealand had the name of the shooter who attacked the Quebec mosque on his guns. I expected more.
What did you tweet back? And to be clear to our listeners, we're not going to spend this whole podcast talking about Andrew Scheer's response to this. This is a way to get at a larger discussion about politicians' reactions to tragedies. So immediately you responded to him.
Well, not immediately. I did write the tweet as soon as I saw his tweet, but I did not share it until the next morning. The reason was because I wasn't sure if I should tweet it.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if I should tweet it in such a public way. My tweet to Andrew Scheer said, "Hi, Andrew Scheer. I'm a reporter with National Observer. You recently spoke at a rally with Faith Goldie, a known white supremacist who has bashed Muslims many times. Do you regret doing that in light of the Christchurch mosque attack? How do you plan to tackle white supremacy and Islamophobia?" The reason I tweeted this was because this rally that I mentioned in my tweet happened 2 weeks ago, barely 2 weeks ago. It was a rally by the United Convoy, which was created to fight for, you know, better jobs in Alberta. but is also anti-immigrant in nature. They are anti-carbon tax. They are also Islamophobic in their messaging. They had a huge rally where they traveled from Alberta to Ottawa to rally for these causes. And Andrew Scheer spoke at that rally where Faith Goldie was also present.
Right.
And the fact that he wrote a tweet after such a huge attack on a mosque in a Western country and did not realize that the same forces were at play in the, you know, rally that he attended is baffling to me. It's actually baffling to me.
You must have seen a lot of these statements in the wake of tragedies in your career. So have I. What makes one of them good or bad?
I think that when they keep happening again and again, as mosque attacks seem to be happening again and again, or not just mosque attacks, just attacks on minorities around the world keep happening again and again, at a certain point, thoughts and prayers, love and support, they're just not enough. At a certain point, we have to be introspective and reflective and question, what are the forces at play here that are leading to such events? And if they keep happening, then there are forces at play. And in order to be responsible actors in our society, we have to step back and say, okay, what's happening? How do we address it? And how do we fix it or try and curb these forces? And I think as a society, we expect our leaders to be at the forefront of that conversation. And I think for 2 weeks, no one was asking Andrew Scheer about this. National Observer did a story about this. My colleague in Ottawa, Carl Meyer, asked Andrew Scheer's office, you know, if he regretted it, if he apologized for it, if he even knew that Faith Goldie was going to be there, and we received zero response. And since then, it's kind of been radio silence. And I think that, you know, if there's an attack again and we get a similar kind of message, it's just going to become redundant and meaningless because we're not really addressing the core issue here.
So what happened when you asked him publicly?
I got a very complicated, diverse range of responses from, yes, why hasn't no one asked this question of him before, to, boo, you're spreading hate and you're a liberal lackey and this is not a question you should be asking because it's not an issue.
What do you think it was about this statement by Scheer in particular that sparked a conversation about how meaningless some of these expressions of remorse can be?
I think it was the fact that you could copy and paste Andrew Scheer's statement and apply it to every single attack. And
right. That's
what's troubling, right? Because every attack is different in terms of the victims, in terms of the location, in terms of the nature of the attack itself. But underlying those factors is you know, a force that we now all recognize to be, call it white nationalism, call it white supremacy, call it Islamophobia, call it anti-immigrant sentiment. Andrew Scheer's tweets did not get to the heart of the issue.
Given that it's probably impossible to provide nuance and context and a deeper self-examining and expression of support, et cetera, in a tweet, what should Andrew Scheer have done?
I think the first step would have been to maybe take some more time. I know we live in an age of rapid responses and being first to say something is something that we all aspire to do now on social media. But I think in the wake of something like this, in order to present the right response, you should have taken some time. And I think that 18 hours after the fact, Andrew Scheer did release a new statement in which he did express, quote, my deep sadness at the tragic loss of innocent life, quote, and the hateful attack on the Muslim community. He actually said the words Muslim community and talked about the mosques and tried to be very specific. He used the phrase Muslim brothers and sisters in a statement. He condemned, quote, in the strongest terms possible, quote, the act of hatred that motivated that attack. But again, it was 18 hours after the fact. And he'd already put out that statement. And did it carry weight at that point after putting out something as vague and broad as that? I don't know. Not to the Muslim community, at least, based on the Twitter reaction.
To be fair to Andrew Scheer, he was not the only Canadian politician who sprang into Twitter in the immediate aftermath.
Yeah, and I think in fairness, there were members of both the Liberal and Conservative Party and the NDP who tweeted afterwards that I highlighted in my story about this the next morning. MP Michael Chong wrote, 6 innocent people shot to death while at worship in a Quebec City mosque. 49 innocent people shot to death while at worship in 2 Christchurch mosques. We've got a problem with terrorism in the form of white supremacists acting minorities. Another Conservative MP, Lisa Raitt, wrote, 49 people were murdered in Christchurch, New Zealand yesterday. This terror has no place in our society. It is pure hatred. And offered her condolences. In a subsequent tweet, she said, anyone who comments on my previous post with anti-Muslim statements will be blocked. I think the reason why Andrew Scheer's tweet stood out so much more versus these other tweets was because it did not specifically address, you know, the victims or the nature of the violence and motivation behind that violence that were at play in New Zealand.
I won't ask you this question about Canadian politics because I know you have a professional role, but as a member of the Muslim community, has there been a public figure whose statements on this have made an impact on you?
I think that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, has been incredible.
Many of those who will have been directly affected by this shooting may be migrants to New Zealand. They may even be refugees here. They have chosen to make New Zealand their home, and it is their home. They are us. The person who has perpetuated this violence against us is not. They have no place in New Zealand.
Whether I go on Instagram or Twitter, she's being hailed as a hero across communities because of the compassion with which she has acted and the speed with which she has acted to a tragedy that till now, no one has really been able to figure out how to tackle. This is a woman who, without controversy or hesitation, put a scarf on in her head, walked into the mosque and paid her deepest and most genuine, at least what it looks like from videos and images, to that community in the day after the attack. Mm-hmm. This is a woman who has promised to abolish, to change gun laws within 10 days of the attack. And this is the first and only attack of its kind that New Zealand has ever witnessed. So let that just carry some weight. And this is also a woman who's just been nothing but compassionate in all her public statements and all her public images. I can't find a single flaw with the way she's acted. It does not seem like PR. It doesn't feel staged. It is a leader genuinely trying to make sure this doesn't happen again. And I don't think you see a lot of that in the aftermath of these kind of tragedies. They somehow become political games often in the way governments handle them and in the way societies respond to them. But in this case, maybe it's because New Zealand really is as amazing a country as everyone says it is. It's been incredible and absolutely shocking in the best way to watch the way the government of New Zealand is handling it, led by this amazing woman.
How has the attack and Canadian leaders' response to it impacted Canada's Muslim community? Because those are the people who need comfort from these leaders in particular.
I think that the connection to Quebec, the very explicit connection to the Quebec mosque shooting had a big role to play in it. I think the Quebec mosque shooting happened 2 years ago, and I feel like a lot of Muslim members on Twitter and on Facebook and on social media publicly have said that it seems like Canada's forgotten that this happened in our backyard so recently. 2 years is not a lot of time. And the fact that the shooter in New Zealand made that explicit connection and was inspired by him, it shouldn't have been so shocking to us because those forces were already here. We saw them 2 years ago manifest. And I think, and I'm speaking personally right now, the reason why this one hit me so close to home is because the ideas and the, you know, the thoughts that took the shooter into that mosque with all the weaponry that he did and led him to kill those many people, those ideas are not far away from me. You know, like in mm-hmm. if you just scroll down the comment section of my tweets, you will see them there. There are people who have told me that you are next in response to my tweet to Andrew Scheer. There are people who have told me to go back to where I came from. There are people who've told me that I'm a terrorist sympathizer for trying to hold a public official accountable for his actions. Those ideas exist in Canada, and for some reason, we close our eyes every time they surface. It feels like Canada forgot the Quebec mosque shooting. And when Andrew Scheer tweeted that, he seemed to confirm that suspicion, and I think that's what people got really rallied over.
I'm asking you this because I think it feels like we're picking specifically on Andrew Scheer, and I mean, nobody's pretending that that tweet didn't deserve it, but to your point, I just went and checked every Twitter statement made in the immediate aftermath by every Canadian politician, and nobody mentioned Quebec, that this had happened
before. Yeah, no one did, and that's something that I noticed, actually. No one mentioned Quebec. There were mentions of terrorism in a couple of statements. There were some mentions of white supremacy as well, the forces of white supremacy, but no one mentioned Quebec. And I think, again, that just, you know, goes back to my point that we forgot and it just happened and people are still trying to recover from it. And it's jarring. I remember, so when the Quebec shooting happened, I remember my mom saying to me that be careful when you go into a mosque. And when this happened and I tweeted and it exploded, my dad said to me, I'm worried you're going to get physically hurt. And the reason why this one perhaps hit more than the Quebec mosque shooting is because this one happened on a Friday. And Fridays are days when most Muslims go to the mosque because it's our day. And I think that's why it hit home. And I know that I go to the mosque on Fridays and I remember, you know, having that conversation with my parents in the morning and friends and family members. And everyone was just like, be careful. And that was a message that seemed stronger this time around than previously. Again, I think the two are linked so closely in every possible way. And the fact that people have forgotten or that people don't recognize that is heartbreaking. One of the comments I got most was that after tweeting that was, I'm fake news. Because, you know, obviously every journalist at Twitter...
You're a journalist with feelings. That's fake.
It's fake news. But second one, which really hurt, was that by tweeting what I tweeted about Andrew Scheer, I was not being respectful of the victims of the tragedy. And that I was somehow spreading hate by asking a question about white supremacy and asking it of a Canadian leader. And I find that broke me a little bit. That broke me a lot because I am still in shock. I am shaking right now as we're having this mm-hmm. conversation. And to think that people could accuse me of not caring about the victims by asking a question just blows my mind a little bit, because the reason I am asking those questions is so that there are no more victims from forces like this. Because at a certain point, if we stop acknowledging and recognizing and reflecting on the fact that there are people and groups in Canada and in other countries that do carry such strong feelings against immigrant communities, then every message that a leader gives that multiculturalism is our strength doesn't really matter. Because if multiculturalism truly is our strength, then as a journalist, as a member of the Canadian society, I expect answers about how you're going to make sure that it stays strong, how you're going to make sure that, you know, all multicultural societies feel welcome and safe in Canada in light of the fact that there are groups that don't want us here. And me asking Andrew Scheer that question is merely me asking for a little accountability and a little clarity from a leader who's running to be a prime minister to explain why he would appear at a rally where these groups were actively present and where these forces were actively on display. Does he adhere to them? Does he believe in them? And if he does, then we got to ask him, okay, so what do you think about multiculturalism? What do you think about diversity? What do you think about immigrant policies? Like, we have to ask these questions. As journalists, it's our responsibility to hold our leaders accountable to the ideas and actions that they convey in right. public office or when they're running for public office. My tweet was me doing that on a public forum, and I think that's why people were so jarred, because usually that happens in an email or in a phone call between a journalist and a leader's office. But I did that in public because we were not getting a response. And probably also because it was a slightly emotional decision on my part that I do slightly regret, but I also don't because it has started this conversation.
Thanks, Fatima.
Thank you, Jordan.
Fatima Syed is an investigative reporter at the National Observer. A little more than an hour after she sat down in studio with us, Justin Trudeau got up in the House of Commons and he made a statement. Judging by what we've been talking about today, it was quite a statement.
We have to chase out this hatred from our parties. Fight it online. Denounce it at town halls. Push back when it reaches our front door. Choosing to stay silent while hatred stews implicity in its most cowardly form.
That was indeed a statement, and that was the big story. For more from us, you can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find us at frequencypodcastnetwork.com and on social media at frequencypods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Hit us up at thebigstory, at thebigstoryfpn on Twitter. We want your story ideas. We got one coming next Monday that is specifically directed by a listener, and we want to do more of those. So find us wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, and a whole bunch of other ones. Leave us a rating, leave us a review, and as always, tell your friends. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.